It's time for the Business of Tech, digging into the biggest business stories from the world of technology. Here's your host, Jonathan Huma.
Welcome back to The Mainframe. Whether you're about bits and bytes or dollars and cents, we've got you covered. Coming up this week, are esports headed to the Olympics? The exploding popularity of video game-based competition as the International Olympic Committee considering requests from groups which want to see their sport recognized and included in the games. I'll speak with Colin Robertson of Sportsnet 590 The Fan's Got Game, who says it's a matter of when, not if. But first, a recent Bloomberg article by Jerry Smith highlights some of the changes the NFL is making to try and re-engage a shrinking audience. After putting fans into a lab and tracking everything from their eyes, heart rates, and skin response, the league came up with some ways to try to keep people watching. Joining me to talk about this is MRU's David Legg. He's a professor and chair at the Department of Health and Physical Education. And David, it's fair to say this is an issue all sports leagues are dealing with.
Well, I think the challenge that they're facing is that advertisers, corporate sponsors, are recognizing that perhaps they're not getting the attention or the eyeballs that they have in the past. And so if you're sponsoring hockey in Canada, why are you paying so much when the consumer, potential consumer, isn't paying any attention to your advertisement? I'm as probably a good example of this as any. I don't watch live NFL football. I PVR it. And I would start it, probably watching perhaps 30 to 40 minutes after kickoff. And that allows me to race through all the commercial breaks and just focus on the quote unquote live sport. And this way I don't find out what the score is until the end of the game as with everybody else, but I can avoid watching all the commercials. And I think that's a common theme. I would say though that that's a common issue for most mechanisms by which to advertise and which to market wares. So I think I don't think this is specific to the NFL or specific to professional sport. I think this is endemic to all marketers, is trying to fight through the plethora of things that are out there trying to attract our attention and just to really get to people's eyeballs.
And it's interesting you say that, because I do the same thing when I watch football, the exact same thing. I record it, I start 30 minutes later, yeah, and I can skip everything. But maybe I was thinking, and maybe you're suggesting that this isn't necessarily the case, but that sports was somehow unique because it's live, because it's happening right then. But maybe that's not the case then. As you say, you can draw these comparisons across the board to other forms of, television entertainment, other types of programming. But maybe as we're talking about here, the PVR has sort of changed that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the myth of live sport being the last bastion of where you can get people to watch commercials is a bit of a myth. And if it's not already a myth, it will quickly become that. The other side of it too is, even if people are watching live, they have at their disposal so many other mechanisms by which to get their attention that even if the commercials are running, the likelihood of people actually watching them and paying attention to them is less. So again, I try to watch live sports with my children, and they are, quote unquote, multitasking, but they've got their phones with them, they've got their iPads, they have other platforms by which they're engaged with, in many cases, very disparate and different, mediums. So it's not just that they're watching the fantasy lines while they're watching NFL football. They've got the NFL football or CFL football on, and then they've got something totally different going on their phone or tablet or laptop or what have you. And so they're not paying attention to the commercials, regardless of whether it's live or whether it's PVR'd.
So there are three sort of big things that came out of this then that I guess they're going to try, and we're going to see it the first game between the Chiefs and the Patriots, mm-hmm, on NBC. This is when the season starts on September 7th. So they've got three sort of things here. So I'll break them down. We'll do each one individually here. So the first, and we can sort of talk about the merits of them here. The first idea is that if there are fewer breaks, but that they're longer, maybe people won't be as apt to get up and walk away. What are the pros and cons to doing something like that?
I think they're grasping at straws as far as that goes. I think the trick, I think people are going to get up and walk away as soon as there's a commercial break, quite honestly, unless it's so brief that they're willing to sit still for just the one quick commercial. I think the goal, quite honestly, is to really push advertisers to make the commercials an event in and of themselves, not unlike what happens during the Super Bowl. Now, we, you know, Canadians are not privy to watching, you know, all the new and fantastic commercials that get shown during the Super Bowl, but we certainly hear about them, and then we search them out on the internet, either following the game or actually probably during our own commercial breaks during the games here. I think that's the trick, is to get marketers to be that much more creative and innovative so that people want to stay and watch the commercials, as opposed to trying to figure out ways to force us to stay and watch the commercials, and or to actually do the way that movies are doing it right now with, you know, the product placement. Are there ways to, you know, to still sell things to us without, but still entertaining and engaging us and not having us want to walk away during a commercial break?
And that's interesting you mentioned that, because they're actually, one of the things that they came up with, or the second idea they had here, was to cut some of the in-game promotional messages. And I never thought about that as being something that offended me or bothered me. And in fact, I was sort of surprised when I heard this, because I thought maybe we'd be seeing more of this. You'd see more things popping up at the bottom, you know, watch 60 Minutes or watch this show on Tuesday or watch this show on Wednesday, or, you know, this quarter brought to you by Pepsi. But is that kind of stuff turning people off as well? I would have thought that would be a way to keep the game going and just, you know, just place more stuff in there. But apparently they're going the other way.
I would have thought if they could shorten the game by doing so, that would appease people. And quite honestly, I think for the most part, people now expect it. Now, maybe initially people would have been aghast by it. It's not unlike having commercials at movies, though, right? I mean, when it first started, people were like, I've already paid my $14 to go and watch a movie. Why do I have to watch a commercial now prior to actually having the feature film start? But very quickly, we get over that, and now it just becomes the expectation and the norm. So I would think that the in-game branding that you see on the billboards and the, you know, that are kind of put onto the field of play itself, superimposed, I think that's an expectation. Now, even the branding on jerseys. So, you know, again, people are feigning that it's going to be the end of the world when the Montreal Canadiens put a logo on their jersey. But I think after it happens, that'll quickly dissipate and people will then just expect it and accept it. So I'm surprised that they would move away from that, because I think it's already become an expectation when you're watching it, particularly if it's free. If it's free to air on television and you're not paying a premium by which to watch it already, I think there should be an expectation that they have to, you know, the broadcaster has to be making a profit somehow.
And I think the one that stuck out for me the most here that we've seen elsewhere, it works with NASCAR. Well, I don't know if it works with NASCAR, but Fox is trying this anyhow, is towards the end of the race, sort of once they get past the halfway point, they go to split screen. They don't break away from what you're watching completely. I know Formula One does that as well. I believe that may just be a North American thing, though, because those races are usually shown in their full form. But I know that when I watch on TSN, they still break away for commercials and keep the race in one side and the advertising on the other. Does that feed into the split focus maybe of the younger generation? I mean, they already want to watch more than one thing, so now you've got two things going.
Well, with the size of our television sets now, that's actually not that bad of an approach. Perhaps, you know, 20 years ago when our screens were significantly smaller, you wouldn't be able to actually see the field of play. But now, having said that, can you imagine if that happens on your phone? So you're watching it online on your phone and suddenly it goes to a split screen and it'd be so tiny that you might not be able, particularly as you get older, you may not be able to pick it up. So that I could see that being an annoyance. But again, perhaps there are ways to almost ladder the ability to watch live sports. So if you want to pay a premium and not have any of those commercial breaks, you can do so. If you want to watch it free to air, that though you have to agree that somehow you're going to sometimes get that split screen that is going to be advertising something to you. And you then buy into that and you agree that because you're getting it free to air, you're willing to live through that quote unquote inconvenience. And if you don't want to handle the advertisement's intrusion into your viewing experience, then you have to be willing to pay for that.
Yeah, and sort of the last thing here I wanted to touch on that they're doing more of, and I don't think it sort of falls into the category of the other three because they're sort of new this year. We've already seen this already, and that's online streaming, selling games to Twitter.
Yahoo and
yeah, exactly. Trying to do that. I mean, to me, I'm a slightly older guy. I remember a time before the internet. I don't think that's something that really sells me on watching more live sports. But is that something that the younger generation will get the younger generation watching if they can stream these things through different services rather than having to, you know, watch on their Xbox or through traditional methods?
Yeah, well, so I'm getting close to 50, so I'm also of that era where I remember having to watch, you know, the NBA Finals on a delay, you know, at 11 o'clock at night, so to speak, because they weren't even going to show it live. I think whether or not the younger generation is going to be more apt to watch it because it's being fed through different digital platforms is yet to be seen. But I think what's happening is if the NFL is having a decrease in viewership, they and certainly other sport franchises and leagues are also concerned about a decline in their viewership. And quite honestly, for the vast majority of them, that's their bread and butter. The actual ticket sales themselves of live patrons is insignificant compared to the actual television contract revenue. So I would suspect that sport franchises and sport leagues are very concerned about making sure they're ahead of the curve as it relates to what people want and how they want to consume their sports being played on different medias. I think what they're doing through the Twitter and the Yahoos and those, they're fishing a little bit. They're trying to see what will catch and what will kind of resonate with people. But I would suspect they're guessing just as much as anybody. What's interesting is you think about the Rogers deal with hockey. Now, initially, I think they probably thought that they overpaid. But when, you know, the Canadian team suddenly made the playoffs, and it's just this past NHL year, I think they realized that that probably was a good deal. So it's tough to predict because I think the ebbs and the flows will depend in part on the way that teams are doing. What if suddenly the Blue Jays go on a run and they're wild card material and they're, you know, they're capturing everybody's attention? That might be more of an indicator as far as what people are willing to kind of how to they're going to load their various mediums versus the actual platform it's being offered on. So it's I think people are guessing a little bit. Now, they run all these focus groups that you made reference to at the start of this podcast, at the start of this interview. But at the end of the day, what people say in those types of interactions as a researcher and what they actually do in behavior are sometimes two very different things. So again, I think it's a bit guesswork.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it really does come down to the product. A lot of people have been complaining that the NFL isn't as good as it used to be, and the NBA is running away with this, at least in America right now, just because of the excitement, and they're doing everything they can to hold on to that right now. So, I guess it's hard to say whether or not technology has made it harder to generate that ad revenue because, I mean, it's so much easier to get to people, but figuring out how to get people to watch right now really is the big challenge. And as I say there, it probably comes down to the product. At the end of the day, you can do all this other stuff. It really doesn't matter if the product stinks.
Well, I think the quality of the product certainly is a huge factor. And, you know, there are various mediums that are all trying to figure out ways to get more, quote unquote, customers, newspapers being one of them, radio. Sirius satellite, online, what is the platform that people are going to gravitate to the easiest and, you know, most frequently? And then what's next? Are we going to have virtual reality to pretend that you're actually in the stadium itself for people to ultimately want to consume watching a sports venue? And that could be an entire new frontier that we haven't even considered.
Yeah, that's the one I'm waiting for, and it's probably a lot closer than we think. Well, from the football field to the digital game space, the International Esports Federation, a South Korean organization, is one of a handful of groups pushing the International Olympic Committee to allow esports to be recognized as an Olympic sport. It would be a stretch to see it in 2020 in South Korea, but what about 2024? I'm joined by Colin Robertson of Sportsnet 590, The Fan's Got Game. So, Colin, it sounds a little unbelievable, but could we see gamers battling it out for gold medals in Paris?
It kind of feels that way. I know that the co-president of the Paris Olympic bid committee kind of opened the door about it being in the 2024 program, which would be a huge step for esports becoming more mainstream because there's so many eyes on the Olympics already. The only thing would be, would this be on the regular TV programming or would this be something that would be streamed? Now, it works well with both because if it's on TV, you get more eyes, more exposure. That's great. But just having esports connected to the Olympics would be such a bump. It would make it just one of the most, the biggest turn of events in sport history, because there's always been this debate of, is esports a sport? And lots of people don't see it that way. They don't see it as, well, just because you sit around and play on a computer doesn't make it a sport. But sports is really just about the competitiveness. It's about team. It's about, it's about playing and working together and striving to win. And that's what the Olympics are all about. So, like it or not, esports is going to be part of the Olympics eventually. It just matters when.
Yeah, and I have a couple of friends who are really into this, really into watching it and stuff. You go over to their place and they have it on just sort of streaming in the background, just like a lot of us have the TV on with shows that we don't necessarily pay much attention to, but it's on in the background noise here. And you sort of talked about the idea of the competitiveness and the training and stuff like that that goes into this. For people that don't understand, talk about sort of the rigors of doing this. I know I've watched documentaries on this. And it's not an easy profession to, first of all, get into, second of all, be good at, and third of all, stay in.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, to be a professional gamer, you're talking about long days of just playing, working on strats, working on like strategy stuff, working on teamwork, working on positioning. You could be doing this for like 16 hours a day, like on your computer or on your console, just working on little things, little tweaks, just like a professional athlete would, go to the gym, or they would just do some kind of like hand-eye stuff. It's not completely comparable, but the time that people put in is. If you want to be a pro gamer, you have to be on schedule. Like, there is no messing around in it. There are huge amounts of money being played for now. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars on the table. Like, it's life-changing.
Are there enough viewers to make this work? Again, I'm sort of talking about, I would know maybe two or three people that are really hardcore into this. Is that enough, though? I mean, it's not something that comes up at parties very often. It's not something you hear about. Certainly not yet. I mean, there are esports shows on mainstream television. Some of the larger sports channels have started to pick up shows, but they usually run late at night and they're sort of more featurey shows, certainly nothing live. Is there enough of a market, or is this something where people would be drawn into it, that they're hoping people would start to watch it if this did go ahead?
I think the IOC is making a very smart approach here. There are a lot of eyes that would not be watching the Olympics that will watch this. There's a lot of kids, teenagers, young adults that would be drawn to the Olympics just to watch esports being played. I mean, everyone knows what the Olympics is and what it means to their country. And suddenly you have your country going for a gold medal in a video game. And it's crazy to think about, but the draw there is huge. I mean, it's a whole segment of people who you wouldn't get watching the Olympics that are suddenly going to watch the Olympics. It's a smart move if they can get it in. What do you have to lose, really?
Yeah, maybe that's the business case. They're drawing in all those extra viewers that you didn't have before, and you're certainly not going to tune people out. I mean, people don't not watch the sports they want to watch just because they don't like some of them.
Exactly. It's the Olympics. I mean, that's the easiest way of putting it. It's the Olympics. It is the biggest sporting event that happens every 2 years, whether it be the summer or the winter. And it's it's gonna draw people, but you suddenly have a whole market that you didn't have before that will be drawn to it.
So I ask this sort of in jest here when I say this, but I mean, so we're talking about, video gaming, which is, as we talked about, sort of hand-eye coordination. There's not really a lot you can do to cheat, sort of, trying to cheat in the game, but I imagine that's somewhat difficult to do, and I'm sure there's people watching for that as well. And again, I ask this sort of in jest, but what do you think in terms of doping and things like that? Is that a thing in esports that we need to be concerned about, or would this possibly be the first cheat-free or cheat-proof game in the Olympics?
Absolutely not. There are plenty of ways to cheat. You have professional players taking Adderall to focus. You have gamers using exploits on different games. Recently, there was a game by Ubisoft called For Honor. There was a tournament for it, and the person who won was using an exploit in the game, and they still gave them the prize money. After the tournament was done, Ubisoft came out and said, "Well, we're going to have to fix that." You know, it's video games are not cheat-proof, unfortunately. I mean, you're still going to have to do drug testing because there are ways to enhance your senses. There are ways to make you more focused. It's something that's been going on the international stage as well that they've finally started to crack down on. So it's same protocols for every person who's going to be going there will be applied to the athletes and the gamers as well if it happens.
Yeah, so nothing is cheat-proof in the Olympics, and then say you would maybe think that it wouldn't be as big a deal with this, but as you say there, especially with the different kind of medications you can take to stay awake and to focus yourself, I guess that would definitely be a concern for them. So what do you think here then? Do you think this will happen here by the 2024 games here? Is this a realistic goal? When do you think we'll start to hear here? Because usually you hear these things when they bring in exhibition games. It's usually at least two games ahead of time just so they can work out all the kinks and get people lined up for it. What's your best guess there?
I think 2024 is a reasonable expectation. I think by that time, esports is just going to continue to grow and it will be too big to ignore. The next thing past that is, which game are you going to choose? I mean, is the IOC going to create a special game for this? Are they going to work with a developer to make a game? It's still far enough to where if the IOC or if the Paris Olympic bid committee kind of says, we'll talk to a developer to make a game for the Olympics, some kind of teamwork game or some kind of, whatever they decide to choose, because that's going to be a huge part of it. It's going to either be a game that they're going to have to work with some kind of developer and company for, or they could just bring it in-house and make their own kind of game and make it a clone of something that people already know and enjoy.
Yeah, that's something else that I hadn't really thought about. I just sort of assumed that maybe it would just sort of be a popular game, but I mean, you'd need those 4 years between the Olympics to train, I would assume. I mean, track and field guys have the same track they can train on for 4 years, so I guess you'd need that time to be able to get good at it.
Yeah, and that's going to be a huge thing because, I mean, it's in such early stages right now, but we just don't know. Just saying that they might bring esports in, that's a good sign, but what game? I mean, there's a whole multitude of games that you can choose from that all have different types of audiences. So the game is really going to matter, and if they decide to kind of go their own way and develop their own game, then it's going to cause even more intrigue because suddenly you're going to have a bunch of gamers on the same playing field from the start, which could cause some crazy amounts of, people who were never known in the esports community to come out of it.
Well, it's definitely an exciting time, and I agree with you. This definitely feels like it has an air of inevitability to it. Well, that wraps up another edition of The Business of Tech. As always, you can find me on Twitter at John Muma. Make sure to tune in next week when we take another look at the business of making tech tick.